when I look across a business, you benchmark certain indicators that are important. So in customer success, it's NPS scores, it's response time for issues. In SRE and engineering, it's about availability. You know, what is our success rate? What is our failure rate? Do we have budgets around that? What does it look like around different aspects of the portfolio? Are certain services doing better than others? Security should be rolled up in certain business metrics like that as well.
Welcome to the Future of Application Security, a podcast for ambitious leaders who want to build a modern and effective AppSec program. Doing application security right is really hard. Now I'm going to help you build a better future of AppSec at your company by curating the lessons from the leaders. I'm your host, Harshal Parikh, CEO of Tromso. And without further ado, let's get into it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Future of Application Security. Today, I have a new guest with us. We have Steve Lukos, Vice President of Security at Clary. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, Archil. Thanks for having me.
Steve, I would love for the audience to get to know you a little bit better, other than just your title. What do you do today at Clary, and how has your career evolved over a period of time? That's a very interesting conversation for us.
All right, thanks. Yeah, today I lead the security and privacy programs at Clary. Before having the entire security program, I led product security engineering for a number of years here. And before that, I really had a non-traditional path in the security industry. Most of my career has been spent in software development and building products. And about 8 or 9 years ago, I really got into building security products. So endpoint detection and response, physical security and access control for doors to get into buildings. And, you know, I really realized and kind of fell in love with what you could do and the kind of value you could add in building these products. And over that time, I interacted with a number of security practitioners, learning how to, they were using our products, learning what their pain points were. And I knew at some point I really wanted to be a practitioner and actually lead a security program and not just sell the bulletproof vest, but actually go and get in the game and lead a program. So I started by my background, software development. Then I led SRE in a large EDR SaaS company. Kind of had experience across the development stack. I did quality very early in my career, did software development, led engineering teams, then led SRE. So really had a good background in all of the areas on building product. You know, that I think that really helped me when I went into securing product, because since I had this kind of view of quality and testing, had this view of DevOps, had this view of engineering, I think the few things that really helped is one, you have empathy when you're securing a product for all the different stakeholders that are part of the process. I've been there. I've been in those shoes where I'm just trying to hit a deadline or get a sprint out the door. I've been there where my teams are getting paged in the middle of the night because of not necessarily a security issue, maybe an availability issue, maybe just noisy alarms. But, you know, there's all these different aspects, and just kind of having a view or being in the shoes of the different stakeholders, I think really helped. Once leading security engineering, I guess in the actual technology aspect of it, I really like working on infrastructure. So spent a lot of time in cloud and working with public cloud systems, securing them, configuring them, getting them scale. So yeah, a lot of different avenues. But then once diving into security, one of the really cool things about it is that it's so fundamental to platforms, especially if you really want to grow your product to be a platform. Security, I mean, you're not going to sell into the enterprise without having proper security. And so you end up engaging with so many stakeholders, whether it's PMs, you know, all the different folks in the engineering process, but even on the front of the house, you engage legal, you engage with marketing. How do we discuss all of the security and great governance things we're building into the product? So it's a nice place to sit because you have a really great wide lens on what the business is doing and how you can help them achieve it.
That's amazing. Steve, I heard you say one thing that I hear very, very often, which is have empathy for the other peers in your organization. And it's very easy to agree to that. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. But the reality is it's really hard to actually translate that into real practical terms. And very few people actually do that in practice, right? So in your particular practice, in your team that you've built, what does that look like? How does that statement about having empathy for your peers translate into actual action?
So I think a lot of these things have to be bottom up, and it's how you kind of craft the persona that the security team has with all the folks they're engaging with. I mean, largely the security team is there to help the organization deliver the value that they're trying to deliver to the customer. So it's not purely a risk management function. It's not purely a secure so we can get compliance. We're doing all of those things so we can help sell more software and deliver more value to our customers. And I think the first thing is having those conversations. So one of the things I encourage any of the new engineers on my team and continuously do over their time at Clary is you have to talk with everyone. You can't just talk with folks in the security team. You have to build relationships with folks in, whether it's on the cloud teams, whether it's product managers. And I think that's an area where it's a little bit less traditional is, you know, I think it's fairly known you have to engage with a lot of the engineers that are building product, but it's also really important to talk with those who are making business prioritization decisions around what we're going to prioritize and build into the product. So it starts there as having the relationships, but then how do we feel that in their shoes? And sometimes it's really explaining the why. So you need to close this, or we want to close this vulnerability. And it's not because it's CVS of 10. That's not the why. The why is that we might have contracts with our customers and we want to make sure that we're operating with integrity. It could be that we need to achieve a certain compliance. We're not achieving SOC 2 for the sake of achieving SOC 2. We're doing it because that is a key tool in the go-to-market motion to assure our customer that we are trustworthy to handle their data. That is why we're doing it. It's not because we want to do compliance. We're doing it to gain customer trust. And I think a lot of it really comes down to what is the why? Why are we doing this? And then also thinking about our processes as well. If we can't really come up with a proper why and articulate it, then it might be an activity we shouldn't be doing. And so without that kind of inspection going on and when we're deciding to do something or not doing something, I think is critical to a process. It's no different. And I think some of this comes from SRE. You would used to hear like, oh, I need this, I don't know, firewall opened, or I need this change in cloud configuration. And it really important to not just, okay, we'll do this, or no, we can't do that for X, Y, Z reasons. Like, well, why do you want that open? Or what are you trying to achieve? And really look at it more from a consulting type perspective, where it's like, how do we help you best achieve what you're trying to do? And it may be what you're asking for. It may be something a little bit different, but we can use our collective expertise to actually get a better, more durable solution. Security is impacted. Scale is impacted. You know, availability. There's a number of things there, but really understanding why someone wants to do something is important. And also when you're asking other teams, that's a critical component of it. Not just because the security team is asking for it, but they're asking for it for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, that's a very legitimate argument and like a sort of a quote unquote contract that you can have or you should have with your peers across engineering and cloud and infra. The challenge that I see all the time is, well, if we meaning the security team, is expected to provide that context about why something matters across every single thing that we ask engineering to do, that's a lot of work that involves looking at so many different data points. And honestly, the security team has to understand the context of the business, which in a lot of cases they don't. So it is a significant amount of work for the security team to build that context of why for every single issue. Is that the way you're thinking about it as well? Like we just have to do the work, or is there a different alternative?
I think the work has to be done, but I don't know if it necessarily needs to be every single issue. So one of the things that product security and AppSec is missing in general is something that other counterparts within IT and operations have, and that's SLAs. So most security tools don't provide this capability. And a lot of the things we're asking for eventually can roll up to SLAs. So when I look across a business, you benchmark certain indicators that are important. So, you know, in customer success, it's NPS scores, it's response time for issues. In SRE and engineering, it's about availability. And what is our success rate? What is our failure rate? Do we have budgets around that? What does it look like around different aspects of the portfolio? Are certain services doing better than others? Security should be rolled up in certain business metrics like that as well. Not necessarily all aspects of security can you do that, but I think for many of them, it's something you can explain the why to, get agreement and buy-in from the stakeholders that it's something we need to achieve for the variety of reasons that we want to, and then find ways to benchmark that across. You know, if you're in B2B SaaS, you might have 4 or 5 product lines. You might have many product lines depending on what size the company is, but you're also going to have different services, even if there's just one, and being able to look across the portfolio and see, this is where we're doing really well, this is where we're not. Because, I mean, one of the things that we have to remember when we're delivering services is that I could build an amazing product and it's delivering a lot of value to my customer. But if I'm also putting my customer at extreme risk because I'm not doing all the things I need to do around data protection, I'm really not delivering great value. Not all of that is necessarily on the surface, but it is something that we have to be mindful of if we're asking them to entrust us with data to do that.
Yeah.
And I think SLAs is an important tool that the security industry itself like doesn't provide a lot of tooling. And I think part of that is that a lot of the solutions are somewhat isolated, so they lack context to the business. So building out that kind of capability internally so you can tag or do other things with signals to align them to different parts of your products, or some tools are starting to do that now, or as we're building more and more things on open platforms, you have capability to do that where you didn't necessarily have it 4 or 5 years ago. I think that'll be really important is that now we have some of these broader views for things that we know we want to do, whether it's vulnerability management, whether it's responding to certain types of issues that come up, but we can benchmark that and just see, hey, where in my business are we doing pretty well on this and where are we not? And then get folks aligned around it.
Right. So the idea here is that you establish a top level alignment with your peers within the organization that we're going to hit this metric, and SLAs, or whether it's mean time to remediate of issues, what have you, kind of similar things, but then you would align with your peers on that particular number and use that as a framework of decision-making. The challenge that could potentially come by is like, well, we agreed to an SLA or remediation timeframe of 7 days for P1 or critical issues, but then everyone starts arguing, but is this really a critical? This is not really a critical, right? So I think you were mentioning earlier, just because it's a CVSS 9.8 doesn't actually mean it's critical. So then that's the next level of decision-making that you have to make at scale, correct?
Yeah, no, you pointed out something that I think is critically important. And it's one of the things that I encourage all security practitioners to really tune up on is writing and documentation. So I've seen this before, you know, I've seen it in act.
So you mentioned using SLAs as a top level metric that you can align with the rest of the leadership team on and then hold the other organizations accountable for meeting that metric. But in a lot of cases, what we see is the pushback that comes in the form of, yes, we agree to an SLA of 7 days of remediation for critical or P1 issues, but then is this really a critical issue? Is this really a P1 issue? And then arguments start at that level between people who have to actually spend time doing it versus a security team. So how do you make decision-making scalable, whether is this really a P1 or a critical? Because just relying on CVSS score doesn't may or may not make sense at that point.
That's a great question. And that's not just a security issue, but we see that even in, you know, I saw it a lot in SRE around availability. What constitutes a P1 or a P0? What constitutes a follow the sun, we have to keep handing off type issue? Is it number of customers? Is it a percentage of calls? What functionality has to be disabled? Similar things in third-party risk I've seen where we were asking folks to select what tier a vendor is based on data classification, but the definitions were a little too ambiguous. And so people weren't sure they were selecting the wrong classifications, which could potentially have you do different decisions in your kind of risk scoring. And yeah, this is an area where there has to be some healthy debate as to what is critical, what is high, and then what is the appropriate level of response. This is something where documentation is critically important. And you don't want to take your classifications and just pull them out of someone else's security operations playbook. They have to be in the context of your business and in the context of that time frame. So I think the security teams are going to need to propose language that they think is reasonable based on where the business is, number of customers, the type of functionality it's providing. But these have to be agreed to. And then, but something that also comes up in postmortems is like, was there confusion on this aspect? How do we get this better? I see this as kind of an evolving paradigm where, yeah, there's undoubtedly going to be times where there's gray areas, a P1 or a P0, or how do we manage this? But if we don't spend time with stakeholders talking about it, it's really difficult to make forward progress. So it's really important to have documented definitions. People can find them. They understand why and where it's being, but it's also it's going to be something that's going to be reviewed and evolved on a contiguous basis, because even if you have perfect ones, you fast forward a year and your company is doubled in size, then your objectives may change.
Right, right. And then it becomes important for you as a security leader to make sure that your team is consistently operating on those agreed upon principles,
how to
codify, classify certain things.
Yeah, and I mean, the accountability goes both ways. You want to make sure that as a security team, you're not pushing the engineering team to do something that from our agreed prioritization doesn't make sense. You know, you want to be mindful of the time they're spending, but also that on the same side, the engineering teams are hitting the SLAs that we agreed to.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love this talk track because that's exactly what Trumps or platform does at scale. But this is an important topic, right? This is the reason we started the company. I think going with these types of decision-making framework that's relevant to your business, that's very important, and which is also related to the other thing that you had mentioned earlier, which is who do you communicate these things to? It may or may not always be the developer or the engineering person, but you really have to involve the key decision makers like product management, for example. So tell me a little bit more about the stakeholder management in terms of who should be your stakeholders. And assume this is like a B2B software organization. Who should be those stakeholders and at what level should that involvement be with those stakeholders?
Yeah, so I think there's a little bit of both bottom up and top down. So the practitioners in the security team should be collaborating with stakeholders across the business and developing champions. I think that's fairly well known and it's a good practice. It also helps you kind of understand where you might have blind spots and can get missing in. But from the stakeholders and like driving security into the product, in a better say, product manager is going to be one of the most critical stakeholders up and down. It could be a product manager that just owns a specific function, but as you get wider, maybe a whole portfolio of products. They're ultimately the folks that are prioritizing the resources and the investments the company is making in new product development. So having them engaged on some of the security needs, and it's not just vulnerabilities or code quality, it's also features. So over the last few years, especially, there's been a lot more regulation around privacy and a lot higher expectations in governance from enterprise customers. So if I want to build a new feature, and it could be a fantastic feature, but it doesn't meet data governance requirements for enterprise customers, it's going to be harder to sell that feature. There's going to be quite a bit of friction in the sales motion. So making sure they have that conversation, hey, in the buying process, the security stakeholder is going to have these questions. Or if we don't implement in this, that, and the other way, we may have issues with our customers being able to comply with a certain privacy regulation. We need to make sure they're aware of those things so it's part of the thesis or the investment that we'll make in new product. Because if we lack these features, you know, it's far more difficult to bolt them on at the end than it is to have them as part of the platform. But if you're really, truly trying to build platform, if you don't have these fundamental pieces in place, then what happens is you end up getting holes. And that's, you know, it's like a firewall. It ended up looking like Swiss cheese or something like that, as opposed to being very thoughtful in what features and governance aspects customers can have. So making sure the product managers are aware of that. Largely, they're going to be coming from a background on whatever the product is that you're selling. So, you know, Clary is in revenue operations, revenue governance, and cadence. So a lot of the product managers are going to be coming from enterprise sales. So they're not necessarily going to be very brushed up in different privacy specifics, data governance, how we secure things. But working with them, they'll understand the importance of it. Their customers will also understand it, but we can help them guide them through. These are the things that we should do. And that'll actually get us a leg up in the market. So things like access control and governance on user permissions and audit are really important no matter what kind of software you're building or selling. They're fundamental things that enterprises want as scrutiny comes down from compliance regimes and just customers wanting to have a much healthier service supply chain. They're going to be looking at these things. So it's important for our product folks to know them. So yeah, I think the decision-making is across the board, but you know, you got to work with these stakeholders so they understand what the asks are. We can't expect them to just know.
Right. This is a phenomenal discussion and I love it, especially because we are expanding the horizons of what's traditionally called a security organization. And this is more, everyone talks about security should be a business enabler, but this is really what it is, right? This is how you enable your business to sell more, to get your customers trust more. And what that translates into is obviously doing the traditional day-to-day things of identifying risk and managing risk. But what you're talking about is sort of varying that security product manager hat and helping your rest of the organization build security capabilities into the platform as features. And by security, I mean a loose definition of security or a broad definition of security, which includes privacy, legal, data governance, protection, all of those things to help your end customers. And that's a little bit of a different scope than traditional security organizations. So I'm curious, how did you staff for that as a leader of the security organization? Who has those, who is the individual? What is the role that consolidates this knowledge between privacy frameworks, legal frameworks, compliance frameworks, data governance frameworks, translates that into Clary's platform features or capabilities and has conversations with the product management hat? What kind of a person does that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's very cross-functional as far as all of those different aspects. And yeah, our security engineering team isn't expected to know all the nuances of privacy and regulatory framework. But that's one of the nice things about collaborating across teams. So for the security engineering team, they spend a lot of time with our security assurance team, which is kind of governance, risk, and compliance rolled up. So those folks are doing a great job in rolling up the regulatory frameworks and then what we're doing for compliance as well and having kind of a unified state of controls that we have across the board. So they help translate that into higher level things that we need to have in the product, whether it be around data retention and governance, whether it be consent in we have call recording features and other aspects of our product, making sure that we are doing what we need so our customers are comfortable that they're meeting their obligations. So there are high level chunks, but the engineers are more than competent enough to take those and then break those down into smaller components of what we might need and where we might need it in the product, whether it's the identity team, or maybe it's one of the more of a back office type function, or maybe it's actually, you know, front and center feature for the customer having opt-ins and things like that. So I think there's these big blocks or buckets of controls you need to have that our security assurance team helps us put together. And then it's our security engineering team primarily working with the product folks to ensure that, one, they're aware of these things, and then two, we're prioritizing when we're building new features and products. So I think there's multiple levels in there. And then and there's also things where we agree to things with our customers. So to make sure that we've documented those in simple enough language that's unambiguous, that our PD teams are, these are now constraints that we have because we've agreed to do these things and we're going to do them. So making sure that we take that information and move those downstream from something that we might agree to in a sales cycle to now this is part of our product.
That's awesome. Yeah, it sounds very similar to what I had done before earlier in one of my previous jobs, which we built a security and privacy executive committee, because when I was leading security, I was not familiar with privacy regulations, compliance regulations at all. So we had this committee that included a representative from the general counsel's team, the legal team. We had somebody from privacy team, more from a privacy law perspective. We had a couple of product management leaders as a part of that committee and also sales go-to-market leaders. So that committee would meet every couple of weeks and we would bring those conversations to the table, what we are hearing from our customers, what does product management priorities look like? How is the governance, privacy, compliance law changing? And, you know, I would bring security aspects to the table and we would jointly make decisions of road mapping and priorities and so on and so forth. So it sounds very similar to that in terms of driving that cross-functional collaboration and improving upon security, risk, privacy posture.
Yeah, no, it's important. I see it come up where customers have this and want to have calls and talk about it, really understand the controls on what we're doing. And so our folks on the go-to-market side see this. It comes up in deal cycles. We bring security assurance analysts on those calls so they can just kind of see what our customers are asking. And, you know, it helps us think about, hey, are there new controls we want to think about? Or is there things we need to talk to our sellers and enablement teams about? Or are there things we need to bring back to PDE? So it's nice to have that. It's important to have some stakeholders on the calls that kind of understand the nuances of what someone in third-party risk or maybe legal on the other side is asking for. And then how do we take this back to our business stakeholders and make sure they understand, you know, this is where things seem to be going, or, you know, this is where the wind appears to be taking in certain aspects of these. It's something we have to think about forward looking.
That's awesome. As there is increasing scrutiny from the government, from regulatory bodies, from SEC, for example, and driving more accountability for the security leaders, do you think that sort of will be a macro that will drive change or that will force us to do different things over a period of time in terms of just doing different things?
Yeah, I think largely it's going to be evolving what we're doing and making sure that we're doing a little bit better. So I think, you know, the changes that the SEC did, things that our customers are asking for, a lot of it is going to go back to basics. Are we doing the blocking and tackling well? Are we doing the fundamentals well? And it's going to make companies look at that a little bit more and figure out, hey, yeah, we are doing this pretty well. These are the things that we should add on to do better. Or if there's areas where there's gaps, there's going to be a little bit more of an urgency to address those. I think that from a macro standpoint is going to be is that companies are going to be held more accountable to these things. So it's going to go back to basics. I think there was a time where, you know, there was a lot of fragmented technology that wasn't working well together. And, you know, when I look at like tooling, it's like, how do I tie all of this data together to get a single story? And that's going to be the types of things that I think really help security practitioners do that. Because, you know, you said earlier, there's so many signals, there's so many features, there's so many different things that security teams need to have purview over and then drive forward. And without having areas that can tie it together and then also add business context to it, like what teams are involved in this, it'll be really hard to drive and scale a program forward. So that's a lot of those things is when I'm thinking about platforms and the stuff that our teams will use. There's a lot of process that you can change and tweak, scale better, but it's also is the tooling you have helping you, you know, look broadly and then also roll that up into something that stakeholders can use.
Phenomenal. That's a fantastic way to synthesize where security needs to go. And honestly, that's what Clary does for sales and revenue organizations. We need something similar for the security organization to make sense of the disparate signals and help us make better business decisions within the security org. With that, Steve, thank you so much for the time on this podcast. This has been such a phenomenal conversation. I really appreciate your time here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Future of Application Security. If you've enjoyed this episode or you are new to the show, I'd love to have you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss any episode. And if you like the podcast, I'd be grateful if you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening.